Good morning.
Good morning.
I am a 56-year-old, mixed race, bisexual, queer, gay, transgender female who happens to be a former sex worker, a recovering drug addict from opiates, alcohol, and heroin. And I married my high school sweetheart. I know. Everything has a happy ending. You know, Judy Garland said, if you're going to cast yourself in your own soap opera, just make sure you don't get the worst role. And I've been thinking a lot about her because I always think about her. I love the Judy Garland. And you're either a Judy Queen or you're an Ethel Queen. Yes? You're either a Judy Queen or an Ethel Queen. I happen to be both of those. The reason I'm both of those is because both of these humans paved way for loud, big, large humans who at that time were marginalized. And these artists took up space. When they talk about these two performers, the interesting thing is when they review them, and I'm talking about the reviewers, the critics, they talk about how they sing, and these are quotes, sing like men. That's what they say, especially about Garland. She sings like a man. And what does that mean? Well, for me, it basically means that she stood in a certain way, she walked in a certain way, she sounded a certain way. And at that time in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, women didn't do that. You were quiet. You were demure. Look at Doris Day, who I love. Look at Doris Day. Yeah. Look at Rosemary Clooney. Look at those performers. Peggy Lee, who stood in a very particular way and gestured in a very particular way, sang in a very particular way. It was beautiful and enigmatic and thrilling, but it was very particular and fit in a container, and we understood it. Then you had someone like Garland, who was messy and chaotic and drunk and loud and big and hilarious and would come to your house and go immediately to the medicine cabinet. Attribute, no. And Mervyn was the same way, large, big gestures, took up an enormous amount of space when she walked in the room. Ernest Borgnine, if you remember Ernest Borgnine, he married her for 10 minutes. She, in her book, you have to get her book, it's fantastic, her autobiography. In her book, there's a chapter called Ernest Borgnine. It's one blank page. Tells you a little bit about their marriage. Here you have this man, arguably this big, large man who took up space, who, when he said, saw Ethel Merman, immediately fell in love with her voice and the sound and the space she took up. Mary and Joseph, walking along, and they have to have this baby, and they come upon this little inn, they say, hey, we're gonna have this baby, and we can't, we got no, that's the sign for watch. I'm a trained actor. And they said, well, there's room in the, if you wanna, and they were like, great, fantastic. So they walk, and they schlep over to the place, and they make some space for themselves and this child that's about to be born. They make space. They make space. As LGBT people, we ask ourselves all the time, but there's no room for me. There's no room at the table. You see, exactly. There's no room at the table. What do we do when there's no room at the table? And as LGBT people, what we're taught to do is to be quiet, be small, and take up less space. Because all of the heteronormative humans are at the table and they're going to make the decisions for all of us. Which is true through history. So the question remains, how do we make space? And what do we do when there's no space for us? I have a suggestion, and it's just a suggestion, you can do whatever you want. If there's no room at the table, go up to the table, get a chair, and make space. It's super simple. It seems like it's a big job. It's not. It seems impossible. It's not. It seems like there's no other alternative but to ask someone for help. There is an alternative. You can make space. You know how I know? Because I've done it. I've done it. I've had to do it. This isn't about me being powerful or strong or courageous or brave. This is about survival, baby. I transitioned in 1980. One time I was walking down the street. It's 1983, 84. I was in my little sundress with my little sunshine shoes and was walking down the street. Thought I looked kind of cute. I was walking down the street. My little hair was done, little makeup on. Chicago, Illinois, early 1980s. And all of a sudden, this police car pulls up, stops, does a U-turn, and comes back. Policeman gets out of the car, throws me against the car, puts my arms behind me, handcuffs me, and starts to take me off to jail. And I thought, is this the fashion police? What have I done? And I said, I don't understand what's going on. And he said to me, it is illegal for you, and this is true at the time, it is illegal for you to walk around the streets of Chicago dressed like that unless you are wearing two articles of male clothing. And I said, like tube socks? What the hell is that supposed to mean? But that was the law. The way I dressed was against the law. And I spent many a night in jail because they kept telling me, you know what? I don't like the way you look. I don't like the way you sound. I don't like the way you dress. I don't like the way you gesture. I don't like the way you talk. I don't like the things you're saying. And I said, then throw me in jail. Then throw me in jail. Because the only thing you can do is throw my body in jail. You cannot imprison my spirit.
Amen. Amen.
That is untouchable, you see, because that was given to me and to you and to your brothers and sisters and others by a power much bigger, much greater, much more beautiful, much more powerful, much more delightful, delicious, and divine than any of us could possibly imagine. That's why we're writing songs about it still to this day. That's why we're writing poetry about it still to this day, because we are trying to figure out exactly what the divine spirit is. And no one person has the answer. Here's another great suggestion. You can do whatever you want. This is just a suggestion. But if you come across somebody who says to you, you know what? I've got the answer. I know what the divine is. Come to my church because I know what the divine is. I've got it. I know exactly what it is. I've explained it. I've drawn it. I have a picture of it in my car. Run screaming from the room.
Yes. Amen.
Because really, the only thing we need to do is hang out with other people who have absolutely no idea what the heck they're doing. Because here's the great gift, humans. Everyone is making it up.
Yep.
Everybody. Me, you, your dad, your mom, your neighbor, your brother, your sister, everyone's making it up. No one's got the answer. Isn't that great news?
Yeah.
Isn't that great news? Because here's the great gift, guys, is that every book you read was made up from the imagination and divine inspiration of the human that wrote it. Every song you sing was made up, written from divine inspiration from the human that wrote it. All we're doing is passing on the phrase, I don't know. That's all we're doing. We are living in the center of the question. Every single human you meet, I'm going to repeat that again. Every single human is making it up. So let's look at the man who's pretending to be president, shall we?
Only if it
because helps. We have to. Because it's imperative. Because here's my suggestion. It's just a suggestion. You can do whatever. That human is doing the best he can with what he knows. Mm-hmm. Yes. Those are two separate thoughts. He's doing the best we can, just like all of us. He's making it up. Every single day, he gets up and he goes, who shall I attack today? Because that's all he knows. Every day, he gets up and he goes, what can I do to hurt my spirit? Every day, because that's all he knows. The reason that's all he knows is because that's all he's been taught. He doesn't hate us. He doesn't know us. He's not trying to destroy us. He's never met us. He's not writing laws against us. We don't exist. And you know why? Because none of us are making space at his table. Whose fault is that? It's not his. It's not his fault. He doesn't know how to get in touch with us. Why would he invite us to his table? There's no point. We don't do that for Thanksgiving dinner, do we? We don't set an extra place for some guy that's going to drop by. It doesn't make any sense. We invite the people we know. And then we ask those people, invite your friends and bring strangers and bring, but they're all connected to people that are in their orbit. So why are we blaming him for a life led when we ourselves don't attempt to help him lead it? It's unfair. So what do? Well, there's three things we can do. We can be seen, we can be heard, and we can be honored. We can do those three things. When I was a sex worker, I did that because I had to make rent, and I also did it because I felt that when I allowed myself to get paid for sex, that somebody actually sold me. I believed that to be true. Hundreds and hundreds of people, men, women, trans people, hundreds and hundreds of people, that I really talked myself into believing, oh, they see me now. A lie I told myself, because I was afraid to look in my own mirror. I avoided that at all costs. So I had to take time to self-reflect. I had to take time to understand where I, not only where I came from, but who I was at that moment. I didn't have to like it. It didn't even have to make sense to me, but I had to look at it so that I didn't rely on others to see me. I know hundreds of people who have made a transition in their life, whether it's physical or spiritual, who say to themselves, oh, because Roxanne and I were talking about, oh, because that person sees me, I am seen. No, you're not. No, you're not. All that means is someone else sees you. Once you see you, then you are seen. I found out a long time ago that in order to be heard, that one of the requirements was not for you to put your hands on me. I spent a lot of time with a lot of people in my life, hurting me, hitting me, pushing me down the stairs. I lost partial hearing in my right ear because a boyfriend duct taped me to a chair and repeatedly banged me over the head with a VCR. And that, for me, was love. That was love. If you hit me, you loved me because you hurt me. Then you got to apologize to me. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. And I forgave you. Until I realized I was listening to the wrong voice. Ah, I was listening to the wrong voice. The voice I should have listened to was this one. Not yours. This one. In 1976, I was in my drama club, and I was sitting under the desk. I was 14 years old, sitting under the desk because I had to be noticed. So I was sitting under the desk, and you didn't want to pay attention to me. I'm the youngest. Look at me. So I'm sitting under the desk, and there's about 30 people in this little tiny conference room in high school. And they go around in drama club. You know, you go around and you say your name and say something about yourself. And I thought, this is going to be really exciting. So I practiced. And I was going to say, and it came to be my turn. I stood up from the desk, and I turned around to face the group, and at the end of this room, sitting on a radiator, was this human being with black hair and white skin and blue, the most incredible eyes, blue hazel, almost a sea green blue hazel pair of eyes looking, I can still see it, looking at me. And my heart started to go really fast, and I started to breathe really fast, And I had this little thing planned. As you can see, I can talk. I can improvise. I know how to do this. This is what I do. I'm quick, man. So when I was a prostitute, that's what I did. You could take me anywhere. You could take me to the corner or the Playboy Club. I was good anywhere. So I know how to do this. And all of a sudden, I couldn't speak. And the director was saying, well, say something about yourself. And I said, I like ice cream. And he said, that human being looked at me in a way that I have never been looked at before. And since 1976, we've gone through a lot of stuff, this human being. Eventually, when I asked this human to marry me, they said yes. And on that day, 22 years ago, I knew that the yes didn't come from pity. I knew that the yes didn't come from history. I knew that the yes came from our present state, because she saw me, she heard me, and she honored my journey. Once she did that, I did that. This is a great word. I love this word joy. It's a great word. We're talking about it a lot. It's a great word. What the heck does it mean? What is the difference between joy and happiness? I believe happiness is a result. Happiness is a state. It's wonderful. I'm happy. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see you. I'm happy to go to the park. You make me happy. Happiness is a state. Joyfulness is action. It takes work. You want to sit around here and be joyful? It's not. It does not. It doesn't help humanity. It doesn't help you. And I challenge you to believe that. You're not sitting around being joyful. You're sitting around being happy. It's like sitting around being nice. I know a lot of nice people, which is great. Kindness takes work. Kindness takes action. If you're going to be joyful, what are you going to do? How do you create joy? Joyfulness, and this is just a suggestion, you can do whatever you want. Joyfulness is self-actualization to the point of self-sacrifice. I'll say it again. Joyfulness is self-actualization to the point of self-sacrifice. What are you giving up? Today, so far, that you have given up, that caused sacrifice in you for somebody else. And I challenge you to say to you, to ask, to beg, do it for someone you disagree with the most. It's easy for you to give it up for these people. These people want you to give it up for them. That's why we're all in the church for the love of Jesus. Because we're good people. Yeah? And you do things for each other. And that's fantastic. That's so nice. And when you do that for each other, you make each other happy. That's great. Have you gone outside? Have you seen what's going on in the world? Do you know what's going on the other side of the planet? Do you know how many humans are without? Or you go home with your children and your food and your clothes? I spent a year and a half of my life on the streets of Chicago. I used to eat out of the dumpsters of McDonald's and Burger King restaurants. I would ask you people for money, and most of the time, when you're homeless, you disappear. I mean disappear. You've done it. You've walked by homeless people before, and you just walk by. And you think, I don't have the money right now. Should I give them money? Or it feels weird if I give them money, or I don't know how to handle them, or maybe they're mentally ill, or how do I have... We've done it. I've done it. I'm guilty. Do we stop at every single homeless person? My God, that would take all day. Then take all day. Then take all day. What have you got to do today that's more important than self-sacrifice for humanity? What have you got to do that's more important than the human existence? What have you got to do that cannot add to the human experience that is part of your divine self that will help you be seen, be heard, and be honored? Not in the reflection of someone else's eyes, but in your own actions. How are you joyful? How do you sing a joyful noise? How do you make a joyful noise unto the Lord so that the angels reverberate your history? How do you do that every single day? I'll tell you how you don't do it. Sit in your house and watch television. Come to church and make each other happy. Go home and do nothing. That's how you don't do it. That's how you don't do it. Pack your bags, angels. God is waiting. Pack your bags. God is waiting. And the train's going to leave with or without you. Your goodness, your kindness, and your joy. Put it in your luggage, honey. Every single time you wake up, every moment you are alive on the planet is a gift and a responsibility. Not to be taken lightly. The way you behave, the way you move, the way you navigate, the way you speak, the way you act, every single moment you are alive on the planet is a gift and a responsibility. So, when there's no room at the inn, you make room. And you not only make room for yourself, you make room for those you disagree with the most. You make room for them so that you educate them, so that you help them. And by that, you help yourself. You educate yourself. You allow yourself to be seen, to be heard, and to be honored. And you do that for others. And you ask yourself every single day you wake up on the planet, what am I doing to help humanity? How am I in service of others? Our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our greatest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most surrounds us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be gorgeous, fabulous, brilliant, gifted? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so other people won't feel insecure around you. You were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within you. It is not in some of us. It is in all of us. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. I'm talking about your life. I'm talking about a life's work, a life's path. I'm talking about you being born from the divine, not just singing about it, not just writing about it, not just reading it. I'm talking about walking down the street the way you walk down the street. I'm talking about speaking in the voice, that's the voice you have. I'm talking about all of the gifts you were given from the time you were born, using them and breaking all the rules. That's how you make space. You want to be an ally? Create space for those who disagree with you most. You want to be part of the family? Create space for those who disagree with you most. Cast yourself in your own soap opera in the best damn role there is. You with me? So, in closing, let me ask you for a small prayer. Let us say to the universe and those that inhabit, and that includes everybody in the universe and those that inhabit, that we ask, beg, plead for all those humans to heal us, that all those humans on the planet that disagree with us, that don't like us, that are trying to stop us, that want us annihilated, we ask for forgiveness. And at the same time, we forgive them. self-sacrifice, angels. We are truly seen. We are truly heard. And we are divinely honored. Thank you very much for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the inspirational words, and also thank you for the challenge. As Alex said, life is ad lib. We are going at it as we go at it. Frank has asked for 5 minutes. I did not ask him what it was for, so you have your 5 minutes now. And I'm going to